Welcome to Hot D, the officially unofficial podcast for House of the Dragon on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're here to talk about Season 1, Episode 2, The Rogue Prince. Aaron, before I get into anything related to House of the Dragon, we got to talk about Rings of Power, because I feel like it's bleeding into House of the Dragon a little bit.
T-Rop? How is T-Rop interfering with her Hot D?
I noticed that in the just-added section of HBO Max, the Desolation of Smaug came up.
Oh.
I don't know if that's just for me, but it seems like it was added for everyone.
Warner flexing.
HBO, I'm wondering if, yeah, they're trying to steal some of the Rings of Power thunder by having all of the Lord of the Rings and Hobbit movies in their catalog right now.
They're trying to muddy the well. And by muddy the well, I mean hang their ass over and shit in it. Because, boy,
The Hobbit.
Ugh. I would not come away from all 9 hours of The Hobbit thinking, oh, boy, I want to tuck into some more Lord of the Rings inspired material from J.R.R. Tolkien.
Right?
No, sir. I would be like, this is not good.
Yeah. So they get them coming and going, right? Like, you can either poison that well, or you can, you know, if people see Rings of Power or they want more, well, you know where to come.
Mm. Well, we're going to know where to come at the end of this week. It's going... No, I can't... Okay, be an adult. Don't walk into the obvious sex pun here. We are going to watch The Rings of Power on Thursday and talk about it. We'll have two complete episodes to gander at, and we'll have complete analysis of that. So if you can't get enough fantasy lore, intrigue, magical goings and doings, stay tuned for our Rings of Power. Check out Dug Too Deep. That's our feed that we're covering that in. Or you can also hit up Bald Move Pulp to get all of the witches, wizards, dragons, zombies, spaceman, spiff action.
Absolutely. All right, now let's talk about House of the Dragon. What did you think about this episode after more watches?
I continue to think this is a very confident and well put together show that's strutting out some good stuff. In fact, I even came around, maybe this is just, you know, you watch it enough times, but like I even found the pacing of Viserys's kind of veer towards Alicent to be a little bit better the second time when I wasn't kind of expecting, you know. They definitely leave things out to, I think, both surprise the viewer and also to have things come as a shock to Rhaenyra. You know, so many times Viserys could have handled this better. But holy schmoly, so far that's been like the subtitle for the show. House of the Dragon, there's so many ways Viserys could have handled this better.
And then he's figuring out through this entire episode, right? He's asking everybody who will indulge him, should I do this? What do you think about this? He's looking for a no on Laena.
Yeah.
But everybody's telling him yes.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, he seems like he just has a hard time having difficult conversations and making difficult choices. And then when presenting with them, he is swerving to some other thing. And you wonder if he's got like the last man you speak to type of disease, where it's like your mind is so moldable that the last reasonable person you talk to, you just go with instead of like carefully considering everyone's argument. And you wonder if Otto knows that and is trying to maneuver himself to be that last man in the room, you know? Must be infuriating if you're the rest of the small council. But no, I thought it was really great. It had some just jaw-dropping set pieces in terms of physical beauty. I thought the Grand Sept of Baelor with Rhaenyra and Alicent was particularly gorgeous. I thought the showdown at the bridge on Dragonstone was also, boy, getting you hot and ready for some dragon on dragon action. And, you know, an uncharacteristic use of like time and atmospheric setting and place to give the show a grand scope and feel. What do you think as a non-book reader, as a show only watcher? What do you think?
I continue to be sort of mesmerized by both the plot and the production of this show. I think, like you said, the Dragonstone shot is just, that's incredible. It looks amazing. It looks almost like something you would see in like a Rings of Power, Lord of the Rings type thing, right? With all the fog and the almost supernatural setting of it all. Is very cool. Yeah, and I'm really digging the way that they're unfolding this story. I think it is better on second watch. I caught some more subtle things maybe that's going on with, you know, Otto and Corliss and Alicent and Rhaenyra, and all this stuff is making more sense. Because I felt when I first watched this episode that it was kind of throwing me to the wolves a little bit with like all these names of like, oh, who's Sir Ryan and like this Kingsguard guy and who are all these other houses that they're mentioning when Kristen Cole is on screen. And I was getting caught up in that stuff. And this time I just sort of like said, all right, well, if they want me to really know who those people are, they'll let me know in future episodes. And I can just enjoy the story for the story they're telling right now. But yeah, I'm really digging it. And the crab feeder looks to have a pretty cool MO. I mean, we're going to talk about the intro.
He's a simple man.
Well, yeah, in a novel and interesting way. We're going to talk about the intro here in a second, but that smash cut from what is a pretty uninspiring intro to that first shot, like, kind of makes up for it. The crab feeder is just nasty.
Yeah, he really is.
Just nasty. And I really love the opening of this episode. But yeah, maybe we should talk about it.
I want to talk a couple other things, related show thing. I can't remember if we talked about this. We probably did in the feedback podcast, but in case you missed it, because I know not everyone indulges in feedback. HBO Max has greenlit the second season on the strength of the 10 plus million people tuning in on opening night to see the new House of the Dragon, Heirs of the Dragon. Viewership actually increased slightly to 2%. That was one of the big fears, is like, okay, sure, everyone came back to gawk and stare. How many people are going to be in for the long run? Not only did they retain the entire audience from the first week, which is kind of unusual, especially for things like this, but it actually slightly increased it. So still a lot of Baldmove faithful have returned, but a lot of Game of Thronesers that were kind of turned off have decided to give House of Dragon another chance, and certainly we're one of those. So I'm excited for that. Also, I've heard, there's just spoilers everywhere out there, people. Like, I can't stress enough the fact that just merely Googling a person's name is going to get you set up with some serious shattering spoilers. Apparently watching the original series, since this is all history and allegory for a lot of main characters, a Tywin Lannister, or a Ned Stark, or a Peter Baelish just might reel off the name of someone that was just background detail about someone's hideous fall or great triumph that might be a named character on this show. And you might get really butthurt about it. And you might take to Twitter and fucking, for some reason, tag everyone you know to let you know that, to share in your misery. It's just really easy to get spoiled out there. I will say, for the people that are in the latter category, number one, get hold of yourself. Number two, there's at least three Rhaenys Targaryens in Targaryen history. Just sure. Because you've heard that, you know, Viserys did this, Viserys did that. There's like five Viseryses. There's 17 Aegons. There's a lot. So you can take solace in the number one. Maybe they're talking about a different Targaryen than you're afeard of. And two, maybe the show zigs instead of zags on some of this stuff. But, you know, yeah. The other thing is, I think this is humanity as a whole needs to slightly get over this goddamn spoiler phobia. Like, if the charm of this, and I get it, like, no one likes to be spoiled, especially on the eve of something, especially when something's really twisty, like The Sixth Sense or whatever. But the vast majority of stories are going to survive you knowing. I got spoiled by The Red Wedding. It still kicked my ass, both when I read it later and then when I saw it on camera. Like, it, the story can survive if it's well told, if you know a bomb or two. You know, I knew the fates of most of the people of The Wire before I started watching it, and that series still is my A1. Well, no, The Leftovers took it over, but it's my A. It's my 1B show as far as on my personal pantheon. So be careful, but also if you catch a spoiler, it's not that bad.
It's tough,
yeah.
Though. stuff out there, because you know you're on Twitter, you're on TikTok, whatever, and you're following your fucking grapefruit researcher, I don't know, and they just happen to be a huge Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire fan, and they're like, oh yeah, remember when somebody said this, and you're like, fuck, yeah, that's okay. Well, you just ruined the whole story for me, grapefruit researcher. What are you doing? You're supposed to be talking about grapefruits, and here you are talking about House of the Dragon.
Yeah. It's like I said, this is the fake history of this fake realm. And just like we might refer to Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and Frederick Douglass as historic figures that had outcomes good, bad, and indifferent, they do that themselves. And so when you're reading the books set in the Thrones era, the Game of Thrones era, when you're watching the series, you might catch a spoiler, but it's okay. You'll be fine. Everyone will be fine. It probably won't destroy, and if it does destroy your enjoyment of the show, then the show wasn't there for much to enjoy. And it seems like there's a lot of charms to the show.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Still early going, but I'm very, very increasingly less cautiously optimistic about this being pretty awesome. And that's all I got to say.
Particularly charming about this show.
What's that?
The intro. It's got the great song. It's got that great Game of Thrones song, but it is still the Game of Thrones song. And on second watch, I did not understand why this was supposed to be a thrilling intro, a grand, epic, sweeping intro. It feels very lackluster in comparison still.
I'm not going to lie. I still think this is a bizarre choice. Do you know what this is?
I assume this is the model that Viserys is making. Valyria.
What is it representing? Did you cotton on? Because I know you haven't researched anything. Like, have you intuited what it is actually is that we're seeing?
I mean, it obviously has something to do with bloodlines of the Targaryens. I don't recognize the symbols that all the blood is flowing to, so I couldn't tell you if those are houses or if those are particular insignia representing different kings or heirs or whatever. I don't know, but it's obviously Targaryen blood.
Yeah, it's really cool. So it's the Targaryen family tree from the time of Aegon the Conqueror. You see a little icon that depicts the Doom of Valyria. There's like fire streaking out of the skies, and there's dragons like and falling into the ocean, and there's a crown that represents Aegon, and it fills up with blood and then goes off into two paths representing his sister. And there's a lot of really cool details. Like, I noticed, speaking of Rhaenys, his sister's dragon, Miraxes, gets shot through with a scorpion bolt. It's kind of like one of Dany's dragons does later on. And it's properly depicted as it going right through the dragon's like eye socket. And there's a really fabulous picture by Chase Stone depicting the dragon smote on the countryside of Dorne with a giant stake driven through its skull. And Rhaenys the First sigil is a dragon skull with a scorpion bolt through it. And that's really neat. There's you see it like kind of flowing together, and you get the, you know, King Jaehaerys, and you see like the nine tributaries of blood because he had a bunch of kids, and it flows through. You see, Viserys' father, Balin, and his wife, you know, making their rivers of blood, and it turns into Viserys. And then you see Queen Aemma, her little sigil that's the Veil of Arryn, the little eagle. It fills up with blood representing her dying. And there's a sneaky little bloodline going off to the side, which probably will connect to Alicent. And then you get you eventually comes down to Rhaenyra, who has that little three-part Valyrian steel kind of Celtic Trinity symbol as her kind of personal sigil. So I'm not going to say that this is as good. I like the music. I think the music is a strong choice. It's a very Star Wars choice. Like, this is like, you know, if you hear this music, you know it's in the Game of Thrones universe. I don't know why we don't have the maps, because it seems like the map can solve a lot of confusion about where we're going. And it seems like there will be some concerns with other parts, although we're still kind of very much in King's Landing, except for a little bit of the crab feeding.
And Dragonstone, yeah.
Yeah, and you get Dragonstone too. I don't know, because like, It seems like everyone's complaint is
Dankmar. What the fuck is the place where Corlys is from?
Oh, the Dornish Marches.
Yeah, what's the castle called there?
The Corlys is from? Oh, Corlys. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Driftmark.
Driftmark. Thank you.
Yeah, I thought we were talking about Crispy. Or whatever, for a minute.
No,
I think that would have been useful. And like a lot of people's complaints is like, well, this might be cool, and I guess the bloodline is kind of cool, but like, man, it added confusion, an instant burst of confusion. I got some other theories about this that I'll talk about here just in a little bit later in the recap when it becomes relevant. But I guess the thing that I'm a little bit excited for is if it becomes like a scoreboard where you'll see rivals' bloodlines extinct, because as soon as someone's sigil fills with blood, that means they're dead. So you'll see rivals submerge, and you'll see new heirs spring forth and kind of track the messiness of the Dance of Dragons through that. That might be kind of cool, but it's
not as visually interesting.
No, I mean, that looping these, over these and above,
just not the same in scope, in grandiosity. But what are you gonna do?
Right.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on the 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
All right, let's get into the full recap here. We're going to start off 6 months later, where the crab feeder has attacked and Corlys is pissed that Viserys still refuses to take any action. Apparently, Kingsguard, Sir Ryan, has died and they need to replace him. And Rhaenyra chimes in with her thoughts on the crab feeder, and they're not happy about that. So the council and the king send her away to pick the new Kingsguard.
Yeah. Someone asked in the instant talk if the ship that Corliss had lost was the Cornelia Marie. I think it was Fisher Protocol, which I think is maybe better known as Opus in our community. I thought he was outlawing me, and I'm like, Jesus, there's the Sea Snake. I don't know how many other famous ships Corliss has got. He was making a dangerous catch joke. That's one of the crab.
Oh.
Which ties into Crab Feeder and is pretty catch, clever. Yeah. But yeah, I got a chuckle out of that when I went to go, because I'm like, Cornelia Marie. All right, I'm going to see what's Cornelia Marie, and it's this dangerous catch. Yeah, there's not a lot to say here other than it's like that meme where you've got the Jurassic Park music and then you've, you know, it's like this beat build up to something that's awesome and it turns into some shitty sixth grade person playing a recorder version of the John Williams theme. You know, Rhaenyra at the end of last episode, resplendent in her Targaryen things, getting named as the heir, everyone bending the knee. And then 6 months later, she's still filling her father's friend's cups with wine and not being taken serious by anyone. It's a sad state of affairs 6 months later.
Yeah. And you see through this episode that, you know, Viserys is afraid to lose her because she is his only heir. So there might be some of that involved. But yeah, it definitely seems more like she's a young woman. She's not fit for any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Which you'd think would be the opposite way you would approach this. You might want to, if you think she's unfit, maybe get her ready for it instead of having her pour wine for you.
And it seems like a wise course of action. Like, you don't have to breathe fire, but you send four dragons just to kind of buzz the stepstones. It's kind of like, you know, sending a message without sending a message, you know, without committing boots on the ground, without shedding, you know, if you're really worried about Essos rising up as one to crush Westeros, like that, you could do something like that. And it's she's just dismissed, you know, which stings her. You can tell. Also, it must be rough being Corliss, because he comes into this with a full head of I told you so steam, because he's the one saying, look, we've got these guys are operating in our turf. They're taking care of our problems. These pirates, and everybody's like, well, they're taking care of the pirates. Well, now, after the pirates have been taken care of, now they're going after Westerosi sailors who are doing legitimate trade and maybe becoming something of a pirate themselves. And now Corliss wants something done, and he's just met with, well, I've sent envoys. We've got things handled. Just trust us. Meanwhile, you're the one losing money and you're the one losing blood.
I don't know. The thing I love about this is I think everybody has a valid argument here. Like, when Viserys later in the episode says it's my obligation to avoid war until it's unavoidable, I think he's absolutely right about that. Nobody, except for these, you know, pent up knights, actually wants a war.
Right.
It will be costly no matter what. So, yeah, he should be doing that. But also, there is a lot in here that Korra's saying, like, you know, what reason does the crab feeder have to fear us? Fair.
Especially when the king's brother,
if you're not going to do anything about it, then
Who's been set aside from being an heir, is squatting in the traditional seat. I mean, people need to understand that, like, Dragonstone is traditionally the seat of the Targaryen heir. You know, it's almost like the box that the batter kind of warms up in baseball. You're on deck. Having his eldest male brother squatting over there and styling himself as the Prince of Dragonstone is sending a very mixed message to the realm, who just 6 months proper bent the knee to Rhaenyra. And Viserys is incapable of doing anything other than being like, well, I can't provoke a war, it seems. It does appear weak from within and without Westeros.
I don't know. From my perspective, having not read any of the Fire and Blood stuff, I don't see Viserys as entirely weak. I mean, his response to Daemon here is, I'm going to fucking get on a boat or a dragon or whatever, and I'm going to go to Dragonstone, and I'm going to put an end to this right fucking now. Daemon is not going to sit in Dragonstone with a dragon's egg that was meant for my rightful heir who died a day after he was born, it's not going to stand. And he gets up with a head full of steam and he's about to go out there and put an end to it. And then Otto steps in, you know?
Right.
And I think like his biggest mistake is not necessarily in action, but listening to Otto more than he's listening to his own thoughts on this matter. I don't know. Yeah. That's just my perspective on Viserys. I don't see him as particularly weak. I see him as like, not as wanting to avoid war and confrontation. And I respect that. But at the same time, Daemon's not like that, right? Daemon's gonna provoke you. So,
yeah.
And yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's super interesting to, I guess, compare the two things that are happening here with the crab feeder and Daemon, or Corlys and Daemon, I guess, because Daemon is yes, he's setting himself up as the heir in more ways than one, right? Taking Dragonstone is one. Taking that egg is another way to say, hey, the rightful heir belongs on my side of the family here.
Right.
And I don't know, when you compare him to like what's going on with the crab feeder, I feel like there are there's a lot of provocation here that's happening. And I don't know necessarily where the crab feeder stuff is coming from. I feel like it's you know, when they talk about the money behind the crab feeder, it's potentially a bigger problem than just some pirates.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
As far as the Sirium of it all, there's nothing known about this guy. Like, there's like two sentences in the you know, Wiki of Ice and Fire, and you know, I'm a big fan of Sirium and his stake home. Did that land? Did that land at all with anybody? I don't know.
I feel like that's just a Midwest thing. Probably not.
But. Yeah, or the only steak themed buffet in the realm, Sirium's. That's I haven't eaten there in many years, ever since he passed away. Anyway, we should go to the picking of the new Kingsguard.
Yeah, I suppose so. We'll have opportunity to talk about the complicated scenario going on there. All right, Rhaenyra chooses Criston Cole as the new Kingsguard because he has actual combat experience. It's the entire scene, but there are subtleties. I do wonder how they're going to fault these knights for not having combat experience when there hasn't been a war literally in their lifetimes.
I mean, maybe you don't fault them, but like if you can find knights that actually have managed to, because there, it's not that there's no conflict in the realm. There's this low level skirmish, right. You know, it's like think about the border of North Korea and South Korea. Like that hasn't been a shooting war in like 60, 70 years, but every few years, patrols go missing and people die and it's a dangerous, you can find yourself in something hairy, potentially international, with, you know, in a heartbeat. And that's what the Dornish marches are. So they're the, if you wondered, Dorne is the kind of appendage at the very south tip of Westeros that kind of trails off into the Stepstones that used to be a land bridge that connects to Essos. And it is divided from the rest of Westeros by the Red Mountains. The Dornish marches are the several hundred miles leagues of plains that lead up to those mountains. And it's kind of long been a no man's land where it's kind of like the demarcation between the Stormlands that the Baratheons rule over, the Reach that the Highgardens, the Tyrells rule over, and the Dorne. You know, that kind of like is a natural fortification. He mentions the Boneway. That's actually properly known as a stone way, which is the single treacherous pass that connects over those mountains, Dorne, to the Stormlands. And since so many people die, it's called the Bone Way. You know, it's my way or the Bone Way. Most Dornishmen are famous for saying. Speaking of provocation, that sounds like a provocative threat.
I don't know. With the lack of war and Rhaenyra's aspirations, I'm surprised she didn't pick a Kingsguard with the most experience pouring wine. That could just be me.
Yeah, there's a couple other, like, you might have recognized the name Dondarrion. Dondarrion is the man who knighted this guy, who we know of a Beric Dondarrion, Dondarrion. I'm having a hard time saying that. The Lightning Lord, who was sent by Ned Stark to bring Gregor Clegane to justice, but instead was killed by the Mountain and resurrected many, many, many times by the Red Priest Thoros of Myr. So there's a little bit of connections to our past and Game of Thrones present. I thought, what did you think of Rhaenyra's aspect here when she's making these calls?
I think it's a pretty good scene because there's behind all of this is this element of like moving these house markers onto, you know, passing the conch here, right? Essentially. Yeah. And there's a formality to that, but there's a politicism to that, that I think is what Rhaenyra is noticing. Like all of these people are being chosen, not based on their actual capabilities, but based on strategic, political considerations from the yes. king and, or from the kingdom's perspective. And the markers really lent themselves to that message in my yeah. mind.
Yeah. It's the way you acquire power during peace are these alliances and, you know, back scratching favors and offering these prestigious positions to, you know, sons of lords and whatnot. And they definitely get that. And I thought it was interesting that like I don't even think she really needs it, but they give Rhaenyra this little stool to kind of help her see over the wall. Mm-hmm. And just the way she was looking at these, scrutinizing these knights, was it Saul himself that talked about Mike from Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad as having the dead mackerel stare?
Maybe.
I can't remember who it was, but like I feel like Rhaenyra was pulling off a pretty good dead mackerel stare. She's just got this thin, flat-lipped, like, you know, expression, and her eyes are kind of narrowed, and she's just kind of like staring at him. Seemed pretty intimidating. And she was just all about, can you stick a piece of steel through another man? I want you on my Kingsguard.
Yeah, it's maybe not the best way to decide this, though, honestly. I mean, the politics and the favor matter. In that
it does.
In the realm. And I think like if she's going to play the quote unquote Game of Thrones, she's going to have to get a hell of a lot better at it.
I mean, it's fair to like start judging Rhaenyra on the decision she's making, you know, uh-huh. like is it seems like we are seeing her as the central protagonist. A lot of people remark that like it seems like she's kind of like, you know, where our sympathies are starting to align. But, you know, mm-hmm. is she going to be a good queen? Will she make good decisions? Is she smart to see that, like, you know, we've had a lot of peace and boy, that last tourney was pretty rowdy. Maybe I do need a Kingsguard that's got a little bit more martial prowess than just good breeding and bloodlines, you know?
She picked a bad time, though, to stop considering favor and politics because that's what this whole episode is about.
Yeah.
With Corlys and Otto and all that. Like, that's what I mean when I say she needs to get better at this. I don't know. It's going to be tough going for her, I'm sure. All right. Viserys talks history with Alicent in his chambers. He breaks his little dragon, and then the topic turns to Rhaenyra. And Viserys tells Alicent not to tell Rhaenyra of their conversations. This is classic grooming. Don't mention our talks to anyone else.
Yeah, and it's also the sheerest evidence that, like, you know, because people can debate about what is right and wrong in medieval context, you know, as far as taking wives and young women and all that kind of stuff. But I think this here says if from Viserys's personal moral code, he knows that there is something shady about this.
Yeah.
He knows that Rhaenyra would be hurt or would be surprised or be angered by this. So he doesn't want that to happen. Therefore, let's keep it from her.
Most shocking thing I discovered this episode is that Viserys didn't actually build that model. I'm pretty disappointed.
He's like the dude that shows up at the 2000 point Warhammer army and you find out, oh yeah, I paid Siege Studios like $5,000 to do all this upright. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. You got some stolen miniature valor. I thought you were cool, Viserys, and now you're just hiring all this work out. Although, maybe he's being a little too modest because we did see the man with the chiseling. Like maybe he's got, you know, maybe he doesn't have as much time as he'd like. So he's more the guy that he's more the rich guy that brings a 2000 point army. And he did have, Siege do his army upright. But he took his one captain and he painted it by hand just to prove that he could, you know,
sure.
Most of this is done by a bunch of paid
measure up.
Or maybe it's just as good, you know, I don't know. It's like, he's like, the Maesters could and be. The Septons did most of this shit, but that watchtower there, that's mine.
This thing also, we find out it is in fact old Valyria.
I will say that I still think it looks like Dragonstone, which isn't surprising because it was architected by old Valyrians. I just didn't understand the scale. Because when he starts looking and pointing at buildings and they're just like these tiny, teeny squares, like it's much, much larger than I first suspected. So, this is old Valyrian. The world learned a new word on Sunday night, a word that's never been uttered by a human tongue, the Anagrion. This is a building in old Valyria that the Blood Mages, according to Viserys, worked their craft. And this is not in Fire and Blood. This is not in a world of ice and fire. This is something that's been invented on the show. And it made me wonder whether the edifice that we see all the blood rolling down in the intro is actually supposed to be this Anagrion. Because, you know, Viserys said that this heart of the city was where close to the volcano, the volcanic source of their magic and their power. The blood mages are doing work in this building. We see these rivers of blood funneling into what looks like a volcanic, very, very Kali Ma, very Temple of Doomish kind of volcanic pit. And all this blood is just dumping into there in rivers. And we've seen blood magic before. Miri Mazdur, the woman who said to Dany she could bring her husband back, Khal Drogo, to life and kind of like fucked her over. She was a blood mage, one of the Magi. I'm pretty sure what some of the stuff that Lady Melisandre was getting up to and leaching people and burning them on braziers and doing prophecies, that was blood magic. It's appearing that like blood, like magic and portents and prophecies are a much larger part of the show than I would have suspected going forward. And I wonder kind of to what end are they going to consciously build new things that will connect the various spinoffs and original series and stuff? Or is this just fun details to make book nerds like me spin our wheels on or what?
Yeah, I didn't even really take note of the Anagrion because I didn't know it was new. All right, then we move over to Alicent and Rhaenyra praying for their dead mothers in the temple. What is this temple called?
It's the Grand Sept, which preceded the Great Sept of Baelor, which will be built about 70 years from now.
Gotcha.
And then destroyed 130 years hence by one Cersei Lannister.
And the important plot takeaway is here that Rhaenyra is having trouble talking to her father, so Alicent tells her she has to make an effort. I like
this. Yeah, she's doing a little bit of Alicent's doing a little bit of a parent trap here. You know, she's like Viserys is saying, you know, I'm just having trouble talking to my daughter. Well, you know, my lord, she'd open up if you would but invite her perhaps to dinner. And then she's like, you know, my dad's just treating her like a little girl. It's like, you know, oftentimes if I want to talk to my father, I have to go to him. She's essentially saying to both of them that they should go to each other. And I think trying to be a good friend. And unfortunately, she is also being forced to this soft seduction of the king by her father, Otto.
I want to talk about that because I see like this line that she has at the end of this scene as, I want him to see me as more than a little girl. Relating to Alicent just as Alicent and Viserys just as much as Rhaenyra and Viserys. I feel like that's what Viserys, if there's anything that Viserys is giving Alicent that is important to her, it's that because Otto does not see her as any kind of equal, right? Do they talk? I'm not even sure they talk ever. He just tells her what to do. Viserys and her are actually having conversations about history and getting to know each other and speaking honestly. There's some grossness there, definitely, but I feel like Alicent is coming around to Viserys just as much as Viserys coming around to her.
Oh, really?
This is a mutual feeling at this point.
My read, and I think it's instructive to look at Allison's body language in this scene, in this preceding scene. You compare how she is with Viserys, where she is saying and doing all the right things, but it's very stilted and mannered, versus mm-hmm. when she's with someone like Rhaenyra, who she truly cares about and is genuine with, and she's a lot more...
Well, and isn't the king. I mean, that can't be taken
There's
out of the
that
equation.
Too.
That this,
sure.
this is the king she's interfacing with, right?
But, like, I don't... She says... So, when you're saying warming up, I are you talking about mm-hmm. in, like, I hope I'm queen? Or are you talking about, like, I kind of growing to admire this man on something other than just, like, oh, he's my friend's father and a king? Like, he's got a little bit of...
The latter. I mean, and getting to know him personally and some mutual respect and affection, not necessarily like sexual. I wasn't reading a ton of that in these scenes, but like, you know, it's
funny.
Where does she get her confidence from? Not from her dad. Yeah. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. Someone did a meme on, I think it was the House of the Dragon subreddit of like, there's this after credit sequence on one of the Rick and Morty's where Summer, you know, Rick's granddaughter is got a friend over and she's looking out the window and dumbass Jerry's out there keeping bees. And her friend, her hot friend has just got the stream of consciousness where she's talking about her dad. Oh, look at your dad. He's such a dork out there keeping bees, beekeeping. How old is your father? I mean, he's beekeeping age, honestly. And it's mm-hmm. kind of, and she's like talking herself into fucking Jerry. And at the end of like 2 minutes of this, and Summer hasn't said anything, she's like, Summer, I want to fuck your dad. And Summer's like, oh, really? Like, and they had pasted, you know, Allison over the hot friend's face and Rhaenyra over Summer's face. And it's super funny. But also, I don't think it's the whole truth. I don't think Allison is like wanting to fuck Viserys.
Yeah,
I hear what you're saying, that like he's become more of a human being to her.
Because I feel like he's the only one who's actually talking to her. And granted, it's not in the best of circumstances here, but
right. And he's not like it's also like, you know, you read in the books and it's like every time something like this happens, you know, it's like it's very dry. It's like, you know, the Otto's like, here's my daughter. And the king's like, hell yeah, young daughter. And it just kind of happens where it's like here. It's like I kind of appreciated the fact that like Viserys wasn't just like predating.
Yeah, it didn't seem like it. I mean, you have to remember, it's been 6 months, right? Like, she's been to his chambers. They've been talking about history.
They're reading
books. They've been becoming friends in a lot of ways.
I think the show is trying, and to the fact that modern audiences grapple with this, like, I get it. But, like, I think the show is trying to say that Viserys is not just, like, a raging perv monster.
Right.
That he doesn't really want to do this at all. He's being forced to make a decision, and he is, by his own lights, making the less horrific one. But
sure, he's following his heart a little bit too, which, you know, is gross out of context, but makes sense in context.
Yeah,
I'm with you.
And the thing is,
like
people be like, why don't you marry a woman your own age? Well, that would be a terrible, I'd be objectively terrible advice. Like, why would a king who has no heirs marry a woman in her late 30s, early 40s in a medieval time? Like, no, you would want to get the youngest, fertilest woman to pump out some heirs real fucking quick. You know, like that would be the primary objective. And I'm not going to say
it's the only reason to marry as they said. Right.
But it's like one of those things where it's like I'm getting a little it's like either down with the show or you're not. Like like the women are just brood bears. OK, that's the way it is. Like we can only hand wring and talk about how gross it is so long until it's like almost feels performative. So that's what's happening. I think the show is trying to say is Viserys is not a bad guy like we've seen other kings be. But sure, it's offensive, but to our modern our sensibilities. And if people are not down with I can't blame them.
And I'm trying to get past all that by saying, like, I do think there's something developing between them that is not necessarily sexual, but more like respect, more like affection.
Yeah.
And so obviously, like, that plays a huge part in the decision he makes at the end of this episode.
I do want to talk about this grand sept. I thought it was really cool how they have essentially this giant like communal altar in the middle that all the seven gods kind of surround. And there's looked like there was individual altars to the individual gods also kind of like in their little alcoves. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to fix on either the mother who was in the background, which would make sense because they're talking about their mothers. Right. Or it also I thought would be interesting if it was the maid, because these two girls praying before, like, especially from Allison's perspective, like, that's, you know, the people that look after essentially, you know, the maid, one of her, she's the patron saint of essentially virginal women in Westeros. Yep. And she's asking to be, I'm being put in a dangerous situation, maiden, can you fucking keep an eye, a spare eye out over me? But it also matches. And the thing is, I thought that the, because usually the mother is depicted with like either a swollen belly or bared breast or even holding a child, whereas this seemed like it was a much more slender figure. So it might be the maid. And I thought it would be kind of neat. It would reflect Allison's actual internal thoughts, since we don't get them. We only get her body language, the things she's saying, how she interacts with her friend, versus I thought it'd be an interesting detail if it turned out this was the maid she was offering a prayer to instead of the mother.
Yeah. It's the thing about Allison. She has no confidants in these episodes, right? She can't tell Rhaenyra about the relationship developing with her father. She can't tell Otto about anything. And, you know, Viserys is there to be a goal.
I don't know. Yeah. And we talked about how beautiful this scene is, but I also thought it was interesting how Rhaenyra, who is not a believer in the Seven, nevertheless kind of gets caught up in the ceremony, in the shared kind of faith with her friend here, and it kind of breaks her down in a way that she hasn't thus far.
Yeah. I think it just gives her permission to feel her feels.
Yeah.
All right, Corlys and Rhaenys. I'm going to say Rhaenys because that's how Viserys says it. Approach Viserys with a plan to strengthen the realm without war, or prove their strength to the realm without war, by uniting their houses in marriage, which would require Viserys to marry their 12-year-old daughter, Lena. This makes sense, right? This really does make sense. Like, this is like, what's a modern day analog? If the president were single and married a general's child.
Or the Speaker of the House's daughter, you know, that gets.
Sure.
You're wielding two branches of the government together by marriage.
Uh-huh. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, no, in fact, like, that's kind of the funny thing is you hear from several different perspectives. He goes and is like, tell me this, tell me that. And like, by the end of that montage, you're like, yeah, this is like the way to go. And then they kind of cut to him walking the gardens with this child. And you're like, you're like recoil. Like, oh, no, fuck that. I don't care if it saves the realm or not. You just can't do it. But I thought it's also this theme of this different way these houses are bonded together. You know, that here's the House Valyrian trying to bond with the Targaryens. You've got the Targaryen house bonding with the Hightowers, both through, you know, relationship with Alicent and also the relationship with Alicent, you know, both by Rhaenyra and Viserys. I love what Lord Corlys says. It's like, you know, I'm a sailor, and if you want to avoid the storm, you can sail straight into it, or you can try to maneuver around it. But what you can't do is just wait for it to come. And if you want a great example of this, watch Robert Redford's All Is Lost, because that is a sailor who does his goddamnedest to let a storm just come and kill him. Does he die? I don't know. I won't spoil it. But it's I like that. And that's what Viserys just really has a hard time doing. He would rather just kind of wait and see until the sea is 30 foot tall and raging. And now it's too late to maneuver.
Yeah. I mean, there was definitely immediately in my mind concerns about Rhaenyra. Like, well, if he does remarry, he's probably going to produce an heir, and he would have to remove Rhaenyra at that point if he had a boy.
Yeah.
You know, and that's probably an issue going through his head, right? I don't feel like he wants to do that to Rhaenyra, but also.
Yeah, I don't think he does at all. Like, I actually think he is trying to hedge his bets. Like, you know, I think that. Man, what does him and Rhaenys think if he had a legitimate male heir through, you know, Viserys's line, and Viserys stuck to his guns and said, no, hey, I said Rhaenyra was the one. Rhaenyra is capable and she's going to be the queen. At some level, mm-hmm. I think Corlys might respect that. He's the only one on a small council that's taking her seriously. And
sure. I mean, look at his also, wife, right? Like, they've probably had conversations about her being passed over before.
Right. And he also has this like kick ass wife who he is deeply and desperately in love with. Like there's this famous story mm-hmm. of Corlys when he came to propose to Rhaenys, and he says, only you are the only one that could have won me back from the sea. I've literally come back from the ends of the earth for you. And she responds, we can always go back to the ends of earth together. Of course, I'll get there first since I'll be flying. Kind of like he's mm-hmm. he's in love and fascinated by this strong woman. And I think he's inclined, but like he's also hedging his bets because Viserys might be a weasel and set his daughter aside, just like his wife was. And he wants in
yeah.
on the airship if that happens. So, yeah.
Yeah, totally. And I really like the sort of competition they're setting up here between, well, frankly, Otto and everyone, but Otto and Corlys for the king's next in line, I guess. The way that they're maneuvering, like Corlys is going direct, right? He's going to the king. He's saying, here's a great opportunity. You should marry my daughter. And that will make that will solve a lot of our problems here. And, you know, not for nothing. It'll also make my family heir to the throne. Yeah. I think he's happy. He would be happy about that. Otto going about it the other way. Otto having the privileged position of being the hand of the king and knowing intimately as much about the king as you could possibly know, and knowing that he could play this particular card with his daughter here and actually trump the much more logically sound card that Corlys is playing here.
Yeah.
I think it's super interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, well, let's move on to later that evening. Viserys and Rhaenyra dine together. Rhaenyra tries to start up an honest conversation with her father, but he kind of shuts her down at every point here.
I wondered, because I watched this a bunch of times, because I was trying to decide whether, does Viserys mistake her attempt to talk about the small council as an apology that he kind of fended off from Corlys to? like she was, did he think that she was going to say, hey, about the small council, I'm sorry, I overstepped my bounds, where I think she was actually going to say, hey, I want to talk about the small council and my ideas. And he was like dismissing her, but like in a way that you might tell your friend, hey, no apologies needed, say no more.
Yeah,
where
young, you'll
and
learn.
It's a little misunderstanding, but also he was pretty abrupt about dismissing her concerns in the small council, you know, with a little help from Otto. So I'm not sure exactly where I land on that. Although the next scene I think is instructive, because they Viserys literally brings up his daughter's concerns, and the Maester is like, pauses, like, who literally gives a fuck mm-hmm. what your daughter thinks, you know? Like, right. No. So I think it's more of like he just is dismissive because that's how they're treating this whole thing. But
well, that's
it
that's
could be a misunderstanding.
Relationship too is what I get. Like they don't talk, right? Like his response is a conversation ender. You're young, yes. You'll learn. That's it. Don't mention it anymore. And that shuts down Rhaenyra, who has taken the advice of Alicent to go make an effort to talk to her father. And by the end of this episode, we will get to a place where they are talking a little more honestly and openly.
Yeah.
But this attempt is just shut down, I think, by just their patterns, their conversational patterns. All right. Viserys's wounded finger is treated as he discusses the Valyrian proposal with some of his small council members, at least two of them, the Hand of the King and the Grand Maester. Grand Maester thinks it's a fine idea, though Otto gives the lightest of pushback, the subtlest of pushback here.
Yeah, saying, oh, he's... I love Otto's face when he hears it. Like,
uh-huh. It's like, God damn, is that's a shitting. Great idea.
How yeah, do I, he's like, how
do I turn this?
How can I argue against this from a place of bullshit without being obviously called out on my bullshit? And he starts off with like, oh, Lord Corlys is overreach, which I thought is interesting that like Lord Strong called it a calculated reach. You know, like this is reaching above his station, but just slightly the way a very ambitious, powerful, wealthy man who has essentially been the swashbuckling Han Solo of the realm would do. You know, like this isn't out of character. This isn't an insult, and it's super attractive. But Otto is trying. And then when that fails, when the Maester is kind of like, hell yeah, you should do this. This is an excellent match. This is just a great idea all around. He goes back to like, I alone understand the pain of losing a wife, and I can't even imagine being forced to choose right now in this very room. And that's the thing is like watching this multiple times, I feel like I didn't need to see the extra scene. Maybe they should have written it, but like you can kind of see between the lines that like Otto is kind of like building this emotional connection to King. Like, hey, I'm the only one that understands you, dude. And I'm going to give you not just leal service, but sympathetic and empathetic service on top of that. And it's clearly what carries the day. And even Otto at the end, like the Maester, he has to admit that like that's sound advice. Like he's not so far gone like the Littlefinger path that he would be like, well, that's just bullshit. And I'm going to give you just totally wrong advice.
Yeah, and I wonder who that's for, right? Does he think he couldn't get away with it? Because my question at the end of this scene is, does Viserys realize that Otto, the reason he really doesn't want him to marry Lena?
I don't think so. I really don't. That's why I wish there was a third scene, because I kind of would like the nuance on how Otto finessed this, you know?
Yeah, there's some... Yeah, I don't know. There's definitely a look on Viserys's face at the end of this, but I can't read it exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's intentional. All right. Viserys and Lena meet in the garden as prospective spouses. Rhaenyra and Rhaenys watch from afar, and Rhaenys tries to impress upon Rhaenyra the order of things, just like Emma did.
Yeah, we talked about this in the instant take that like this is where it's like this scene is like, yeah, man, it's Valyrian marriage seems like the way to go. And then you see this like, you know, 11-year-old girl looking like one of those girls from a beauty pageant. And it's like, you know, let's hear the speech. And she's like, I will bear you many healthy children. And my mommy says I don't have to do that until I'm 14. Like, it's just you can just see Viserys like this isn't going to fucking work, man.
Oh, no.
And she's doing the same. And she's doing the same stuff that Allison's doing. Like, she's trying to appeal to his love. You know, Corliss has been in hers here. This guy fucking goes crazy about history. Mm-hmm. Mentioned the fact that he's the only living man who's ever swung his leg over Balerion the Black Dread. The last one that ever did so. It's interesting that they name check the largest living dragon still left. It's the one, one of the ones that came across with Aegon. His sister Visenya rode her. Vhagar. She is the big bad she dragon of the realm. You think this is Chekhov's dragon? Are we going to see?
I don't think so. And I have no foreknowledge of any of this stuff. What I do have is Game of Thrones, and I don't remember a mention of Vhagar anywhere in Game of Thrones. And I would think that if something big happened with Vhagar returning to the realm and, like, I don't know, fucking melting a city or determining the outcome of the Dance of Dragons, I would almost certainly have heard about that in Game of Thrones. So, no, I don't think it's going to happen.
Mildly interesting.
Yeah.
By the way, like, a lot of people probably are brand new fans that didn't go through the Game of Thrones. That's my way of non-committally answering Jim's speculation, because I've read the books and presumably know a lot. And I saw a lot of people in that dynamic, you know, when I was listening to podcasts in advance of Game of Thrones, where the book reader had barely contained glee at the correctness or wrongness of their counter. And it kind of like gave away the game. So I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I just did a mild show, mild interest in anything Jim has to say. And that's,
you let your
that's
eyes
the meme.
Glaze over. You let your brain glaze over and you say mildly interesting.
Yeah. Didn't we have the death of mildly interesting? That was one of the
after the books,
the Gravedigger and the Hound thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We might need to do a reprise of that T-shirt where, like, mildly interesting is busting out of the grave like a like a zombie, because holy shit, I didn't think it would, but it kind of is.
Yeah. Another holy shit moment in this scene is when Rhaenys and Rhaenyra are talking. And Rhaenyra goes pretty hard at Rhaenys here. Like, they didn't deny the heir. They denied you, Princess Rhaenys. Like,
that was strong.
That's pretty personal for this
that was
young
strong.
Girl.
Yeah. Especially since, like, Rhaenyra is young and she wasn't around, but, like, no one bent the knee to Rhaenys. She's right about that. But, like, the Queen Allison herself, you know, said when she was presented to her, oh, this is our queen to be. Like, it was pretty widely assumed that she would be until she was set aside by her father, Jaehaerys. In fact, Queen Allison and Jaehaerys's love affair is, like, legendary. Like, they are one of those kings and queens that just was a good match. They loved each other, was faithful to each other. It was the one of the few times that the queen was estranged. She was so pissed that the king set his own granddaughter aside that she said to Jaehaerys, a ruler needs a good head and a true heart. A cock is not essential. And if your grace truly believes that women lack the wit to rule, plainly you have no further need of me. She got on a dragon and she fucked off for 2 years, leaving the king bereft. So Rhaenyra is talking some mad shit, and Rhaenys, from her perspective, doesn't really, you know, give it back to her, because she's sad than anything that the realm is the way it is.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's the impetuance of youth here, right? Thinking they know everything. Of course, we all do.
And she points out that, like, 15. Oh, if you're going to do such many big things, like, why is it that it's been 6 months and you're still refilling your father's cups? You know, there's also, like, Rhaenyra kind of saying, well, I'll change the system when I'm queen. Very reminiscent of Daenerys's breaking the wheel when she's queen.
Sure.
Time will tell. See how much wheel breaking and change going goes on.
For sure. I'm curious about what she says about, you know, men would sooner put the realm to the torch and see a woman ascend the Iron Throne, and your father's no fool. Does he understand what the realm will tolerate and what they won't? Is that what goes into his choosing him taking a new wife? You know, it's not the most strategic decision, but Allison is, you know, a perfectly fine choice as far as the realm cares.
Well, it's borderline mildly interesting, because I think that And as, again, as I don't think this is a recontextualization of history. I think this is a Maester 300 years after the fact, missing some subtle nuances. But like, it's I'm actually watching the show to see kind of like, why did Viserys put Rhaenyra right after the Great Council? And it looks like it's the show's thesis that this was much more a impetuous reaction to
Daemon's
bullshit than it was a, you know what, the queen that I've been, the king that I've been looking for is right in front of me, and it's a queen, you know. And there's almost like, you compare what Viserys is saying, like, hastily, he's like, oh, I gotta tell you about all this and I gotta start training you, and then 6 months later she's still the cupbearer. I'm starting to get the impression that it's much more, and even though he specifically says later on this episode, don't worry, I'm not going to set you aside no matter what happens, because he is no fool, he's got to know that the lords are going to, you know, they're expecting him to get an heir. And he's saying like, oh yeah, it's a strengthener line because we're too easy to snuff out. But if you got five heirs and three of them are male, you know what the realm's going to do, because the realm just did it a couple of years ago. Like, this is not ancient history. This is like the 2016 election. Does anybody, has anyone forgotten? Anybody forgotten who was running in there and what was the stakes? Who felt like they were like, no, it's very fresh in the realm's mind. So, yeah, no, I'm definitely seeing like that he never really intended this to happen, and it was all about scoring one over Daemon, and not really thinking about the consequences. And you can see Daemon is the one guy that can bypass all that reasoned, you know, well, last resort. Like, he can just push a button and have Viserys jump and dance.
Yeah, like brothers do, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and they're shading it a little bit with some, you know, looks when she's called the queen that who never was or whatever. There's a look there where he's like, yeah, I know that probably shouldn't have been the case, but what are you going to do? So they're emotionally shading it, but I think, yeah, ultimately when he comes down to it, he understands what the realm expects of him. All right, Viserys tells Alicent about the Valyrian proposal, and she plays it cool and then gives him a gift. It's his repaired little dragon. And then Otto interrupts with a call for an emergency small council session. And Alicent knows, man, Alicent's got his number, right? He knows what's, or she knows what's important to him. It's his tabletop games.
Yeah. And how much of that is her? How much of that is her dad? Like, I read all this as like very neutral game. Like, she is not, like, we've seen Margaery play a very strong game to to get into a king's pants. Several king's pants, actually. We see what that looks like. We definitely seen, like, Sansa would be the negative game, where she's, like, not wanting any fucking part of any of this shit. Gross, no. She is essentially trying to find, I think, some kind of internal path that's consistent to her loyalty to her father, her concern for her own place, and her loyalty to her friend. And probably the realm is in there somewhere too. And like, you can see, like, I just love it when, you know, he's like, oh, they're wanting me to marry another queen, and she's like, is there anyone in mind? But she asks it very mild interest, you know. It's not, she's playing, like, cast, I said, I
formally, yeah.
And she's very, very mannered in all these appearances. Like, she's very, her body language is very, again, stiff and stilted. But she is playing the game.
All right, we go over to the emergency small council session, which reveals that Daemon stole a dragon egg and took it back to Dragonstone. And adding insult to injury, he stole it because he's getting a second marriage to his concubine, Emissaria. And she's already pregnant. Oh, and the egg that he stole was the egg that Rhaenyra had chosen to put in Balon's cradle. Viserys wants to go to Dragonstone to deal with Daemon, but Otto volunteers to go in his place because it's too dangerous.
This has one, the scenes has one of my favorite bits of like Martin, like, lore. Like, I love it when a character says half a hundred to mean cat countless. Like, there's half a hundred ways you could do this. The other is these hours, like the hour of the bat. What a great fucking name for the first midnight, like, truly dark. Like, well, it's transition between like dusk, because that's when bats come out of the roost. They're not out in the middle of the night.
The devil has the midnight. So
you've got the witching hour. I don't know if they have the blood mage hour. You've got hour of the bat, hour of the owl, hour of the wolf, hour of the eel. There's a couple of named hours, and I love it. Like, when they bust out hour of the bat, I did a little dance on the couch.
Does a dragon get an hour?
That's the dragon doesn't hour. Get an hour because these are Westerosi phrases, not Valyrian. But yeah, and like how Otto is inflaming the king, because you can you can tell everyone else in a small council is trying to choose their word. It's like, who is he marrying? Well, you know, the Lady Masari is, it's the common whore that he's taken to bed, the get his baseboard get from. Like, he's just like saying it in the least diplomatic ways, which is going to lead to borderline disaster and other scenes. But yeah, and you can tell, like, you know, like Viserys is not even that really upset until the nature of the dragon egg, which is interesting. You'd think Otto would point that out. I wonder if Otto doesn't see the significance because he really wasn't paying attention to all this Targaryen bullshit, but Rhaenyra knows.
Yeah, he's more focused on Daemon and what Daemon is doing as opposed to like the particular intricacies of, you know, why he's picking certain eggs and whatnot.
Yeah, but when he finds out this was Balon, Balon's egg, he's like, that's it. I'm fucking mounting up myself. And then Otto steps in there with Commander Riker. I can't let the captain go lead an away team mission himself. Right. It's too dangerous. It's too dangerous, Jean-Luc, JL.
And then we're left to question again, you know, all the questions we had about whether Daemon would actually put the sword to his brother in order to become king here. At this point, it doesn't help him, right? I mean, he'd have to put the sword to Rhaenyra, as she says later in the episode. But yeah, all of that is a question mark. But the fact that Otto goes, I think, is the worst possible choice. I think these two uniquely hate each other.
Yes, this is true.
And if there was ever a potential for violence to break out here and this to go disastrously wrong, it's for Otto to go over there and try and deal with this. Because Daemon doesn't respect Otto. Daemon hates Otto. Otto hates Daemon. Otto wants Daemon gone, as best I can tell. He wants him dead.
Agreed.
So,
it does make me wonder about Otto is like, where does the realm fit in here? Because normally I think he's at least, you know, trying to pay attention. Like, he doesn't want to plunge. He's not like a Littlefinger. Littlefinger will, I believe, plunge the realm into blood and death just for shits and grins climb that ladder. Right? I think Otto definitely has one hand on the rung of chaos, but he's also got one hand like, man, I don't really want all these people to die. And when I see him get baited by Daemon into a situation where they almost all die, I wonder, like, what the hell was he thinking? Because that's not even good for him. No. Like, he's not assured his daughter's place. Like, if maybe they were married, Otto goes there and he's a little careless because who gives a fuck? My name is secure. But, like, I feel like these are just unforced errors. Yeah, he's just unforced. That'd be
if she was married and pregnant, he says,
you know what, Viserys, you're the one to do it. Yeah.
Right. If you know your brother best, you go deal with this.
Right. Yeah. No, he's
I don't think Daemon would kill Viserys. Right. Like the way he backs down from Rhaenyra here. I don't think he's bluffing. He's a child throwing a tantrum is what he is. And it becomes so apparent in this next scene with him.
Yeah.
It's hilarious, actually, what a child.
Well, I'll have more commentary on this when you get to the second son speech, but like, it seems like Daemon has a pretty big insecurity complex, and the second people stop paying attention or he feels unloved, he starts acting out. And that's what this is. Like, all it's manifestly obvious that all he wanted was Viserys to show up and be like, Jesus Christ, what the fuck, Daemon? You know, and because Daemon also probably wants to come back to court. And that's the thing. He's not like just showing up on the Red Worm and just showing up to the small council. Like, from Daemon's crazy mind, he probably thinks squatting in Dragonstone is the compromise between just storming the Red Keep and saying, love me, and just being the meek little boy that stays out in the Vale and the Runestone where he's supposed to. Like, this is like his middle ground, right? This crazy provocation. But from his mind, it's halfway to where he wants to be. So.
Right. Yeah. To me, it's a kid throwing a tantrum and not being able to back any of it up because it's all silly. All right. Let's move over to Otto suggesting that Alicent go to see Viserys that night as he prepares to go to Dragonstone with 20 guards, including Kristen Cole.
So this is, I think this scene right here is the best evidence of Alicent's internal state, because we've seen her nails before and they were kind of a horror show, but like they're, she's like gnawed them down to the second phalanges in this scene. Like, they are just complete. Fuck. And I feel like that's the best evidence of her anguished mental state about being put in this position with the king and her best friend and how she really feels. Because even her father's picking up on, you know, and also not showing concern, but just like, oh, man, you're never gonna seduce the king with nails like these, honey. You know,
right.
Like he can't see the girl in front of him. All he sees is the woman that can be auctioned off for lands and titles.
And I wonder how much of, you know, because this is a complicated stew of a scenario here, I wonder how much of the Rhaenyra is affecting her, how much of the marriage is affecting her. Like, what is she most nervous about? What is causing her to pick at herself like this? In my mind, it's the friendship with Rhaenyra. She knows this is going to be just a huge change. I mean, when your best friend becomes your mom, things get weird, right?
Yeah, no, it'd be real fucking weird. Me and my son were talking about this, about like, because we were watching this together. He never watched Game of Thrones, but now he's 16 and he's watching this, and he was like, I don't understand why this is a bombshell. And it's like, well, imagine if I died and your mom married your current best friend. I mentioned the guy he plays, and he just like, Jesus Christ, why? What the fuck, Dad? Why? It's like, well, that's exactly what's happening. And he's like, you know, like, oh yeah, I get it now.
Totally.
So yeah,
the other factor here is like, what if she fails in her mission? Right, and her mission is to marry the king. Apparently, how is that going to affect her relationship with Otto? Her dad, is he, what kind of person is he? I don't have a great read on him. Is there going to be hell to pay if she fails? Is it going to be something where he says, it's okay, you know, we tried.
Yeah, but she's a quiet disappointment. Happening. And conversely, what does, if we have a Queen Alicent situation, she will suddenly become more powerful and influential than her father in a lot of ways. True. And to the extent that she feels used or embittered by him, does he have anything to worry about? You know, has his service as a father to her been leal? I don't think so. So like, yeah, these are things to keep in mind.
And I think like the other thing here about the marriage is it's trapping her into that scenario, which she's already uncomfortable with, right? Like Otto is going to be in her ear trying to get her to tell the king things to do, at least until, you know, she becomes adept enough to think these things for herself, and probably then turns on Otto, who knows. But she's stuck in a situation where she didn't want to go to Viserys. She didn't want to be the girl who was trying to win his heart and whisper things in his ear and get him to do what she wants him to do. Otto put her in that position, and now he's about to lock her into that position for life. So
yeah,
that all these things are weighing on her. It's a super horrible position to be in, whether she gets married to Viserys or not, right? Either way, it's a lose-lose for her.
Something else they mentioned on the official podcast, Jason, I can't remember his co-host, they're mentioning the fact that, like, in backdrop to the previous episode, these two girls both saw this horrific fate of women, you know, their valor on the battlefield of the bed, right? Is any of that echoing through these girls' minds as they're talking about marriage and, you know, like, oh my God, we saw what happened to the last queen. You know, there's, I can't remember where I heard this, but I heard in some pre-industrial societies that mortality of women in childbirth was could be as high as like 25-30%. Cause you know, we're on the ragged evolutionary edge for how big a brain we can push out, how narrow a birth canal. To the extent that like we are kind of alone in mammals, and you know you got kangaroos and stuff like that like we come out as these mewling larvae. We're not even fully developed. It takes another 2 years before we can start walking and talking. You compare that to like horses and everything else, like they kind of come out ready to go. And the compromise is every once in a while a woman dies. It's dangerous, and I that's something I kind of lost sight of, is like maybe that's rattling around too, that these are girls who are just fantasizing about flying away and eating cake all day, and now they're like, Jesus Christ, we're gonna have to do this stuff. It's interesting. It's something to keep in mind.
All right, let's go to what is probably the best scene of the episode. Daemon's crew meets Otto's crew on the bridge to Dragonstone, where things threaten to turn violent. Fortunately, Rhaenyra shows up riding Syrax and calls Daemon's bluff, taking back the dragon egg.
Yeah.
Ooh-wee. I love the look of this scene, first off. All that fog rolling in across the sea there.
It's early morning.
Just this beautiful setting. Yeah, the sun's rising. You've got these people meeting out on a bridge. Dragons get involved. I mean, it just gets cooler and cooler as it goes. But, man, yeah. It's a beautiful scene.
Yeah, and we talked about there's also a neat sense of scale, like when Syrax shows up and you see her against Caraxes, and you see the Caraxes is about twice as the size. You know, you get an idea of like the size and power of these dragons, the size and and disposition of the forces between the two men or two groups rather. It's just stunning. Like, it looks like a particularly beautiful Magic the Gathering card illustration, and I'm loving how, you know, they're just really leaning into some of this, the really beautiful artwork that's in like A World of Ice and Fire, the encyclopedia, some of the illustrations we've seen. It just looks so good, and it's so cool, and it just gives me so much excitement for what's going to happen now when we actually start getting into the action. We're just in the setup phase right now, the setup and character building phase. But eventually this show is going to switch into action mode. And holy moly, imagine like the tourney scene only with dragons. Like, that's, I don't think we've ever seen anything like that. Yeah. This side of Matthew McConaughey in Reign of Fire, you know. But yeah,
here's some of the hilarious stuff, though, talking about how this scene looks. There's some great dragon work in this scene. There's some slightly shaky dragon work, and the shaky dragon work always comes where the interface of human and CG dragon happen.
Oh, really? You thought there was some shakiness there?
Some literal shakiness. Yeah. The camera gets weird for a second when Rhaenyra lands and it cuts to a close up of her. And then they cut totally away when she dismounts her dragon. And I'm like, yes, yes. We saw what happened when Emilia Clarke tried to get on and off that dragon. It did not look good.
Now, just I will say away. That having a saddle has to help that, right? Because there's no excuse not to build a physical saddle for her to jump on. So there shouldn't be any of this awkward, like, you know, trying to pick my way through spines on this rubber dragon back. Yeah, it's...
Yeah, it's stirrups. You got a saddle. Just hop on there. But yeah, they cut away, and I was grateful for it.
I like Daemon confidently swaggering up, and he's like tossing the egg back and forth like a football. And Otto just immediately starts off with, your occupancy is an inn, release the egg, banish your whore, leave Dragonstone, mic drop. And Daemon's like, no, sword unsheath. And Otto has no response other than to say, you're not going to do this. This is stupid. And Daemon's like, I am stupid. Yeah, that's exactly the kind of motherfucker I am. And I don't know. I don't know. I think Otto goes home eggless.
Uh-huh.
I don't know that Daemon slaughtered, because like that's just war. You kill the Hand of the King, the Lord Commander of the King's Guard, another King's Guard. It wasn't the Grand Maester there too. Like,
maybe, yeah.
You are going to piss off 2/3 of Westeros by doing that, if not 3/4, 4/5.
Yeah,
and I don't think Daemon is that stupid. But
no.
Yeah. But he's also, if Otto does something stupid, he absolutely will finish it and capitalize on it.
Yeah, yeah. He can. I don't know. You can't really claim self-defense when you're stealing eggs and occupying territories unlawfully.
Yeah,
tough to claim that, but yeah, I think like Rhaenyra showing up here is the saving grace, and I love it for two reasons. A, it gets them out of this very tense situation without conflict or without violent conflict, and B, it shows us again, it reinforces the idea that Daemon and Rhaenyra have a warm relationship. You know, like there is. I could certainly see him attacking Otto if Otto attacked him, Daemon, but I cannot see him making any move whatsoever against Rhaenyra. And she uses that to her advantage here.
Yeah.
She calls his bluff. You know, like, look, I'm the thing that is stopping you from being the heir.
Yeah. Take care of me. I'm here.
Do it. Take care of it. Yep. And boom, you're the heir again.
Do it. Kill me. I'm here.
Absolutely. And he backs down. So he's clearly not prepared to take this, what I would consider over the edge, and what obviously the realm would consider over the edge, right?
And also, it's not just blood and his affection for his niece. I think that Daemon respects power and spunk. Like when Sir Crispin, sure, as he calls him, you know, he insults Crispin and Kristen comes back. Oh, yeah, I'm the one that put you on your ass. And I think Daemon genuinely laughs and says, very good. Like, I see you. That's a sick burn. You got me. And he starting to respect Rhaenyra. Sees the kinship between them, that like they're both like these high stakes, you know, riverboat gamblers politically, that kind of don't give a fuck.
But it just shows how toothless all of this is, right? Like,
yeah,
Daemon. I mean, what is Daemon's recourse here for being a spurned heir? There is no recourse. You just have to deal with it or start a war. Like, and he's obviously not prepared to do that. So
people ask me about when people come of age in Westeros, because that was Daemon's pretext yeah. for, and I looked into it. There's actually a whole article in a wiki of Ice and Fire that's cribbed from the world of Ice and Fire that is about the customs of Westeros. And it says for age majority for both boys and girls, 16 is the age of legal majority. From that point, they are referred to as a man grown and a woman grown. However, for girls, there are exceptions. A girl who's had her first flowering, i.e. her menstruation cycle, is considered to be both fit for marriage and consummation of a marriage. Most highborn girls have their first flowering between the age of 12 or 13, bringing them in a somewhat ambiguous position. They're considered to be part child, part woman, can be referred to as maid or maiden, and even if she's not reached the age of 16, considered a woman full grown. So we see that there is laws, but the girls are in a murky area because their value is in their woman parts and in a way that's not the same as the men. So, yeah, yeah. That's the also they mentioned that lords and ladies who inherit while still in their minority often or usually have a regent who makes all their decisions until they come of age. So he's technically correct. If Rhaenyra is 15, he is probably one of the reasons he did something this bold is that he knew he had something of a fig leaf that. Well, you're not of age yet. You can't really inherit this castle yet.
Sure. Yeah, but the taking of that particular egg shows how personal this is, how designed to provoke this is, whether he has that fig leaf of legality or not.
He's a very malignant person. I mean, it takes a cross-grain son of a bitch to think about it. Offer this calculated an insult, you know?
All right, let's go to his chambers, I guess, where Masseria is pissed that Daemon claimed they were going to be married and have a child together and is worried what fate his antics might bring down upon her. Rightfully so.
Oh, I mean, yeah, like the you know, we get some color to her character here. If you can understand what she's saying, because this accent.
Not a fan. There's too much French in it.
I feel like that was what weirded me out. I hated Shay's accent. I hate Shoshe. Oh my god, I hate Shoshe. I thought she's a terrible actor, and I thought her accent was pretty bad. I think they're one of the now I hate her even more because I think they're trying to pound the Masseria into that Shay shape so we can have something to relate to. And I think the you know, essentially foreign born sex worker accent in Westeros is seen as this, and it's just, oh man, it's not great. But her story of like, look, I've been used and abused my whole life. I have taken great pains to make sure that this can never happen again. And look at, like, if you die and the realm thinks I'm with your child, I am dead next. Because the last thing they want is some kind of fucking dark horse heir growing up on some forsaken city of Essos that could always just come out of nowhere and
fuck the last thing we need is a Game of Thrones. Come on, Daemon.
Yeah, I mean, we saw how hot Robert Baratheon was to kill Dany, you know, who was a 15-year-old girl at the time too, right? So like, she's livid that he, you know, she, he, I didn't come to you for prominence or position or wealth. I came to you for liberation from fear.
Which is a real out of the pan, into the fire kind of situation. How long did she know Damon before? Well, I guess Damon's situation has recently changed.
True.
That's the thing. Like, because I'm thinking, look, you came to the wrong place, lady. If you were looking for liberation from fear, you picked a real fucking wild card to hang that dream on. And I have to remember that it has been only recently that he is no longer the heir to the entire seven kingdoms.
Or
however many kingdoms there are at this point.
Yeah.
But he seems
seven
like,
kingdoms is a huge misnomer, by the way. Like, there's like, I think 9.5 at the time of Aegon's conquering. So like, I've always like, I was like, oh yeah, seven kingdoms. When you actually go to count them up, we're like, oh shit.
Gotcha.
It doesn't really neatly map on to the actual kings and kingdoms before Aegon. But yeah, so it's a little confusing.
So yeah, I do definitely feel for her, even though I had a little bit of trouble with the accent. We'll see if it evens out. All right, Viserys asks Lord Lionel, I think is his Strong. Name? Lionel Strong. Okay. What he thinks about the Valyrian proposal. He thinks it's a great idea and that the Corlys might not take it well if he's turned down. Then Viserys gets word that Rhaenyra has returned from Dragonstone, which surprises him.
Yeah, I like that. It's a reach, but a calculated one, and a fair play for a man in his position. I'm telling you, Strong has got the based and realm pilled opinion. I like this dude.
And it's hilarious to me how Viserys is just going around to every person he can talk to. He's gonna be out in the fucking. I don't know if Flea Bottom exists at this point, but he's going to be out there like asking peasants what they think about this proposal.
I hear there's a fucking legend down here. I want his opinion. Bring me the legend of Flea Bottom. Yeah.
Right? He's going to hold a sword to some peasant's throat and say, tell me not to do this before he finally makes his decision. Hilarious. All right. Then Rhaenyra braces for her father's fury. But when she explains herself and why she went to Dragonstone, and her success, he softens. And this leads to a frank conversation about the death of Amma and his duty to shore up the line of succession.
And when he says he's vulnerable too easily ended, I think he literally means, like, there's just you and me, and then that's it. Like, we need more heir. Because it's like, there's safety in that. If there's only one or two, schemers might think, you know, with the right faceless man and the right poison, the right widow's tears, we could do something. But if you get like six heirs, there's not enough scheming in the world that can get like you will be found and killed by one of the other heirs that's benefited from you. You're not going to be able to profit. So like there is some wisdom to this that like, hey, like, look, I'm not trying to replace your mom. Certainly not going to try to replace you as my heir. We just need more heirs. We need that cover. We need our house to be strong. Do you believe him? Do you believe his sincerity in this moment about not replacing her?
This is a good question. I don't know. I don't know. Because I do think he feels bad for what happened to Rhaenys. And I don't think he wants to intentionally replace her. But he is kind of duty bound. And I get that. Him going in and his fury not being directed at like, I can't believe you did something unapproved, but more like concern for her. I don't know how legitimate that is either. Like, is he actually concerned for her because he loves his daughter, or is he actually concerned for her because she's his only heir and that could end their line and cause him all kinds of problems?
Right.
I don't know. It's very complicated.
And it, like, to the extent that there's probably both of those, like, what is the greater part, you know?
Right.
And the real tragedy
is... The one he voices is, you're my only heir. What the fuck are you doing? Which is not comforting as a parent.
And what's tragic is I really feel like if he had leveled with Rhaenyra here, it's like, look, I'm being forced to marry and my options are Laena and Alicent. Mm. And I know she's your best friend and I'm doing this. This is not something I'm really wanting to do, but like, it'll straighten out the small council. It'll be, I don't know. Maybe she says, Dad, you got to marry Laena. You're going to fucking piss off the Valyrians and like have us. Yeah. I, I don't know, but I feel like this is the time where they are coming together mm-hmm. and being honest and saying, I don't want to replace you. And like, mom would understand what you're doing just as much as I do. Like, this is the time that, and he just can't do it. He can't do it.
Yeah. They're so close to having a breakthrough here.
Yeah.
But the decision he makes directly after this just throws all that right into chaos again.
Yeah.
Because my God, they had a real conversation here. They'll need at least another one after that final scene. But let's talk about it. The small council gathers and Viserys announces that he's going to marry Alicent. Of course, that pisses off Corlys and Rhaenyra and pleases Otto.
Many, many people pointed out the reality TV aspect of the way he did this.
Yeah.
Where it's like, it's this is something, silly,
but
it's something out of like, yeah, Survivor or The Bachelor probably is the more it's like, where it's like, you know, and I'm going
to
Jerry
pick Springer, like, oh, you had a baby with your best friend's husband's boyfriend.
And we've got the genetic test and the result
here
is
today. Yeah, and they bring him out. Yeah.
We're going to pan from camera to camera and play the music and see everyone's face. And yeah, but
totally. And it doesn't make a lot of in-world sense, like why Alicent would be here and why no one would wonder why Alicent is here in this small council meeting.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
I did notice something weird that I thought was weird, which is, he says, I'm to be wed before spring, implying they're just coming out of a winter, you know, because like winter and spring, they're completely different in Westeros. Yeah. I did not think of them as being in winter, but I don't know.
All right. So six months, yeah. We had a winter in there somewhere.
Or the winter has lasted for years and they're just now slow. I don't know. I thought that was a bizarre. Yeah. It's almost like I do wonder if the writer's room forgot. Or maybe there's also a refinement where there's like a capital S spring and a capital W winter. Mm-hmm. But there's also like the seasonal variations within those two. So like there's a lowercase spring. I don't know. I wish I had access to Condal because I would ask him. I'd be like, what the fuck? What the fuck is going on?
It's getting confusing already.
A Gornion or whatever the hell it is. What the hell's going on with all the spring stuff? But I don't. We'll have to see.
This is an episode 2 fatal mistake, I feel. Like, this is going to cause so many problems. You look at what happened with Rob and Talisa I think was her name.
Yeah. Oh, very wife he chose big. Over, this is very big. Daughters. Very big Robb Stark energy. Yeah.
That did not go well for anybody.
At least that
involved.
Was over true love and it was a boy. It is wild that a man of his age and station is making this mistake.
Uh-huh.
And man, Rhaenyra's face when she figures it out, because she figures it out a split second. Yep. She can see what her dad's doing. She can see Otto. She can see Allison just like feeling terrible. Like she's all but chewing her fingers in the scene. Mm-hmm. And then fucking Otto again. What is he giving him that like chin wag?
Something spicy. Just like you just got outplayed, dude.
Yeah. Like if I was Coruscant, I'd come and I'd smack the shit out of him on my way out of the small council. Cause this is an outrageous insult. Like when everyone on the small council says, and you got to wonder like how much Corliss knows about this. Like, was he behind the lattice work listening like Daemon was before? Does he have
right,
connections?
With his bright white hair. Yeah.
Right. High contrast skin and hair mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know, but like, you could tell he felt confident, like as he's like, oh, hell yeah. Yes. Pushing away straighter. From the table, getting ready to stand up and congratulate my new. And then he just gets punched in the nuts and he's infuriated. And yeah, oof.
Yeah. No, he thought Otto, he had the winning move.
Otto's think maybe acting a little too big for his britches, although his britches have gotten a lot bigger. So maybe he's going to grow into him.
Yeah, we'll see. But that was a great scene. And then we get to another very promising, very portent-filled scene here where the spurned Corliss meets with Daemon to propose an alliance to deal with the crab feeder trouble in the Stepstones. It feels like it's more than that to me. There feels like this ominous undertone to this scene that is less about the Stepstones and more about the anger that Corliss feels against Viserys.
Well, there's also the second son thing that we do. You remember the last episode, Daemon's talking about Otto and he's like, don't you understand? He's some sniveling, scheming second son that's out for position and glory. Mm-hmm. Daemon is a second son and he's kind of telling on himself. Well, he's literally this younger brother of Viserys, who if he was born before Viserys, he'd be the king right the hell now.
Gotcha.
So like, that's, I think, something interesting is like whenever he says like dismissively and with venom, that's his nightmare of how people see him. And mm-hmm. Corliss shrewdly is picking on that and being like, hey, you know, we are the second sons of old Valerius, the Valerians. We scrimped and saved and made our way on the high sea. And he makes this interesting mm-hmm. kind of lore based thing where he says, unlike all the other high lords, I built my high seat with my own two hands. He's referring to the fact that like all these other great castles have been built in antiquity, but he came back wealthy and powerful from his voyages, looked around at Driftmark and was like, you know, this castle is cramped and damp and I want a different kind of amp in my life. I want to get amped up. And he built,
he built
a very nice and airy silver capped castle called High Tide. That he built on a different set. So he actually built his own seat now. He's living in a new and improved castle, and he's bragging about it. Like, look, I am the selfest made man that you can ever get, and you and I are simpatico. Which works up into a point, because he starts talking shit about the king, and Daemon doesn't. He's the only one that gets to talk shit about the king.
Which, but that mentality is so crazy. Like, I'm the only one who can shit on my own family members.
It's not an uncommon thing, though.
How about your family and maybe you shouldn't shit on them? But yeah. You're right. It's absolutely not uncommon. It's just crazy how that works.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know. I mean, Corliss wants to keep his shipping lines intact for the industry that he's in, I guess. I just wonder if there's more to it than, hey, I'm going to go deal with the Stepstones, king be damned.
Because it seems like there's two ways. Because I asked you this in the show, and I don't think I got a straight answer. On a scale of light treason at 1 and high treason at 10, what kind of treason is happening here?
I think it's like, this is a 3. This is a 3 on the treason scale.
Another calculated reach, would you say?
I would say so, yeah. I think, like, doing something that the king hasn't forbidden, but the king refuses to do himself in the interest of your own industry and well-being, I think is not like high treason. It's not the kind of thing you get your head on a pike for, but
Corlys is the first admiral. He's the Lord of Fleets. Uh-huh. Like if he uses his ships and Daemon Steel and gold cloaks to do this.
Sure.
I think, and they crucially, they succeed. I think that they don't get too much shit for it. Now, if they start using dragons and stuff, that might be an overreach to get your head on a pike. But I wonder if they're going to find a way. Now, the danger here, of course, is if they do succeed and they've got this political cover, suddenly you have a whole bunch of merchants and lords that are very, very grateful to Corlys Velaryon and Daemon Targaryen. And maybe secretly, privately, especially if Corlys and Daemon are egging them on, thinking like, oh, boy, glad we have men of action like this to rely on because our king ain't shit. There's a real danger here.
And then you have the
here.
Three cities who are pissed that the people, the crab feeder they were funding has been, you know, knocked down a peg. So
right.
You might accidentally start a war here between the three cities and the kingdoms, which Viserys is actively trying to avoid.
Yeah, but I think that is very careful that they were like making sure that they weren't talking about taking direct action for the king. This is something they were doing on behalf of the realm and also for their own glory because we're second sons. Our worth isn't given. We got to take it.
It makes Viserys look a lot weaker, right? If he has refused to do this, to take this move, and then unilaterally his master of ships decides to go do it himself, and Viserys doesn't respond to that.
Yeah.
He's going to look even weaker than he already does because his small council is falling apart.
Yeah. And then we got the crab feeder. Like that guy looks real gross. There's a lot of people have opined that he doesn't look healthy. Looks like he might have grayscale or some kind of
scurvy. This is what scurvy looks like.
The face
is
scurvy.
Been at sea too long. Yeah. He didn't bring enough oranges.
Yeah. I wonder what happens next, you know, where does this go?
I mean, that's the question.
Cause like I said, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of big plot points in Fire and Blood, but there's also a lot of room to color and, you know, there is definitely, especially in the shades of like, you know, here's what they did, but why did they do it? And what was this move calculated to do? There's a lot of that analysis that's absent from the books that the showrunners could have a good time playing with. And I'm really curious to see how they shake it out and where people's loyalties start falling on this show.
I also want to mention the production details in this scene. They're doing a lot with giving each person's personal space a personal flavor.
Yeah.
You know, you have the king with his gigantic model of old Valyrian in his chambers. You've got Corlys here, who is presumably in his chambers, and he's got barnacle and shell-encrusted busts. He's got skulls of different, I assume that's like a snake or something.
Right, exotic animals he's collected in his voyages.
Yeah. They're really giving him like this completely pirate metal decor, and I think it's very cool.
They mentioned in the books how the High Tide is where he kept all of his treasures that he had captured from the east. So like you could definitely just pan around, you just see all this exotic non-Westerosi shit.
Yes.
You know, stuff that looks like he dredged off the bottom of the ocean. It's very, very nautical themed. I thought it was super cool too. And a great way to like set location and setting.
Mm-hmm. All right. That's all I got for this episode.
Yeah, what do we miss? What ideas do you've got? What things that you need a little bit deeper dive on, explanations from? We've got that and more coming Thursday. If you'd like to send feedback into hotd@baldmove.com. Jim and I are standing by. Also, Maester Anthony will be stopping by with another Maester's Corner with some more talk about the lore. And again, you know, it looks like maybe there's more connections to the present day, quote unquote, of Game of Thrones than we initially suspected, that they're in a very MCU Marvel universe kind of way, trying to pre-connect some of these others. You know, I did that dive into Princess Rhaenyra, Nymeria last episode. And Kim mentioned that in her cast of Kings with David Chin, that that's one of the other spinoffs they're talking about. So it looks like maybe they're doing double duty with a lot of this stuff as serving as springboards for further spinoffs of the Game of Thrones brand. So we'll see. HotD@baldmove.com if you'd like to talk about that stuff. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/baldmove. You can also find our Discord that has lots of non-spoilery and spoilery clearly marked and enforced discussions going on at discord.baldmove.com. And yeah, be careful of spoilers. And also keep in mind when we're doing our instant talks for club members on Sunday night that we're trying to be a show first. If you have stuff that connects to the future or is forward-looking speculation, I don't mind because, like I said, I've read Fire and Blood and all that stuff, The Rogue Prince, The Queen and the Princess, Princess and the Queen. But send that in to hotd@baldmove.com so that we're not spoiling our fellow fans here. We'll see you Thursday for the feedback episode, including the Maester's Corner. And then again on Sunday night, right after the airtime, we will be going live for our club members to record an instant talk or instant take and instant talk podcasts. That's our plan. Oh God, the Rings of Power start up this week. What? Mm-hmm. It's fantasy fans eating good this here autumn. We're rich harvest of dragons and hobbits. From the old crops.
Can't get enough hobbits, go to HBO Max. They got 9 hours of them for you.
Yeah, it's like how we all feel about pumpkin spice November 1st. It's like, yeah. or maybe not. Maybe I'm the only one. But anyway, hotd@baldmove.com, and we'll see you in a couple days. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.